Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, I'm Sarah.
And I'm Toby.
And this is the Whispering Woods podcast. This episode is all about...
witches.
Yes, it's a witchy episode because it's Witches Night on the 30th, Tuesday, so tomorrow. So I thought I'd do a witchy episode. But first of all, we have a couple of reviews to read. Yay!
This is a message from Charlie. Hi, I'd just like to thank you all for your amazing podcasts. I love the way you tell your stories. Please keep up the good work you are doing. I've got a few ghosts and scary stories to tell you if you would be interested from where I live, Rochford, Essex.
Aww, thank you. Thanks, Charlie. And yes, we'd be really interested in your stories. Also, I want to thank Charlie for giving me the idea for the main subject of the podcast, which is the Canoodoo witches. I really hope I pronounced that correctly. I looked at YouTube, so I'm just gone with that. So sorry if I haven't, and I don't mean to offend anybody. I'm just a bit thick. Just a little bit. I've got a review to read as well. This was left on Facebook by Tammy. She says, it's a great podcast to listen to any time of the day. I love listening to Sarah's voice narrating the stories. She has a wonderful voice. Calm and one that keeps you listening. I love the chats between Sarah and Toby. This is a podcast that I binge listen to from the start to current in a few weeks. Oh, thank you, Tammy.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks so much for that. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by visiting patreon.com/thewhisperingwoods, where we've got some different tiers there, pay tiers. You can listen ad-free if you subscribe. Also, you can support us by joining us on social media. I must say, our little group on Facebook is lovely. It's just nice. You know, it's a real nice sort of welcome. It's building up. And it's just a really nice welcoming sort of space if anybody wants to come and say hello. The links are in the podcast notes, so you don't need to worry about remembering. I'm not going to say them because people will never remember what they are. But they are listed down in the podcast notes. Also, I know this might be a bit of a pain in the backside, but with the adverts, you may notice that there's a bunch of them at the start of the podcast now. Because what I'm trying to do is move what's called the mid-roll to the beginning of the podcast so that I don't need to put it, so that it sort of sticks in the middle, if you know what I mean. I don't like it that it kind of interrupts the flow of the podcast. So I've noticed on other podcasts, they put their mid-roll right at the beginning as well. So you just fast forward. I think we still get paid for it, but it's a trial and error thing. So we'll see. I don't want to disturb people's listening. That's my main thing, you know? Right. So, Witches of Canowdon. I've probably said that wrong now. Do you know anything about them?
Nah.
Okay, because I've done a very long introduction bit, and then I've got three short stories that aren't related, but they are people's experiences where they think that a witch has been sort of following them or watching them. So, are you ready for the introduction?
Yes, I am.
The history of Canowdon Village is steeped in legend and mystery. Located in the Rochford district of Essex, England, Canowdon sits atop one of the highest hills along the Essex coastline. Canowdon's roots stretch back to Neolithic times, around 4000 to 2000 BC. The land bore witness to ancient farmsteads, cemeteries, and prehistoric activity. Gravel extraction in the early 20th century revealed remnants of this ancient past, including a hoard of Neolithic axes and Iron Age artifacts. The Bronze Age Canowdon paddle, now displayed at the National Maritime Museum in Greenwich, attest to the village's ancient heritage. Canowdon's strategic location near the sea made it favourable for trade and salt production. Roman urns discovered in the village hint at its Roman past. Along the coast, Roman Red Hill Saltons, salt production structures, were constructed. Salt played a crucial role in ancient diets, metallurgy, and other applications. The name Canowdon predates the Danish king Canute the Great by about 400 years. Legend has it that Canowdon was the site of an ancient camp used by King Canute during the Battle of Assandon nearby Ashingdon in 1016. Remnants of Canute's camp are believed to be marked in the entrenchments between the village and the river. The name Canowdon derives from the Saxon phrase Hill of Canna's People. In the Domesday Book of 1086, Canowdon was documented as Carandúna with 28 households. Swain of Essex, son of Robert Fitzwimmark, held significant land in the Rochford area during this period. St. Nicholas's Church, perched on one of Canowdon's highest hills, offers sweeping views of the Crouch Estuary, The church originates from the 14th century, and it's steeped in tradition and local folklore. According to the legend, it has intriguing connections to ghosts, witchcraft, and even the devil. This historical gem was featured in an article titled "The 14 Most Haunted Places in Essex to Visit This Halloween," written by Emily Talbot and published in the Essex Chronicle on October the 13th, 2014. Canewdon is known as the village where witchfinders feared to tread. And the focal point of these stories is the parish church of St. Nicholas. According to legend, if you walk around the church seven times on Halloween, you'll catch a glimpse of a witch. Circling it 13 times supposedly renders you invisible. The daring souls who run around it anti-clockwise, the devil himself may make an appearance. No wonder Essex police seal off the area on October 31st to prevent curious crowds from attempting these rituals. The most frequently cited apparition is that of a faceless grey lady. She drifts silently on moonless nights, moving from the church's west gate toward the river. These ethereal figures are believed to be the restless spirits of accused witches, forever bound to wander due to past injustices. Another legend asserts that the devil himself resides beneath one of the tombstones in the churchyard. To ward off this malevolent presence, children would perform protective dances around the churchyard. Another intriguing legend suggests that as long as the tower of St. Nicholas Church stands, six witches reside in Canewdon. Three of them belong to the lower class, cotton, while the other three are of the higher class, silk. Whenever a stone falls from the tower, one of the witches is said to depart, only to be replaced by another. But where did this legend come from? The following information has been taken from Rochford District History org. Long ago, witches faced accusations of harbouring imps, often small animals, which led to many being hanged. These imps were believed to be conduits for passing on the witch's power. A curious tale illustrates this phenomena. In the outskirts of Canewdon, at Ballard's Gore, resided an old smith. Whispers circulated that he had bartered his soul to the devil, a pact that left him perpetually glancing over his shoulder. Few friends dared to visit him as he lay on his deathbed. Observers noticed his eyes, still vibrant, scanning the room as if tracking an unseen presence. Suddenly, a circular scorch mark materialised on the bed, and a small white mouse scurried into the centre. The smith declared,
I can't die while the imp is there.
Desperate, he implored his wife to take it, but she declined, fearing its power. Next, he turned to his daughter, insisting that only her acceptance of this creature would release him from this limbo. Tearfully, she carried the animal away, and as she left, the smith breathed his last breath. The watchers knew his daughter was now a witch. Living in a village steeped in witchcraft beliefs had its peculiarities. Canewdon was shunned by neighbouring communities. Locals eyed each other warily, suspecting hidden powers. To ward off evil forces, scissors and knives were discreetly placed under doormats, iron and steel barriers against witches' passage. One incident involved an old lady who, in a moment of forgetfulness, turned back from a doorway. Unbeknownst to her, this act branded her as a witch. George Pickinghill, born around 1816, was an English farm labourer who resided in the village of Canewdon. Although he worked the land, his reputation extended far beyond the fields. Widely regarded as a cunning man, he possessed an uncanny ability to wield magical means for various purposes. Pickinghill was sought after by people from all corners of Essex who sought his magical aid. He didn't charge for his services. His repertoire included curing ailments and locating lost property using mysterious methods. However, there was a darker side. He was also known to threaten curses upon those who dared to defy him. Locals attributed extraordinary powers to Pickinghill. They believed he could control animals at will. Even more intriguingly, he supposedly commanded imps, mischievous supernatural beings, to carry out his bidding. Pickinghill's influence extended to the realm of witchcraft. According to local accounts, he held sway over both the coven, the group of witches, and the villagers. When Pickinghill requested water drawn from the pump, no one dared refuse. Disobedience risked invoking his curses. These curses often left victims gravely ill until he chose to lift the spell. Some tales even claimed that he controlled either 6 or 9 malevolent witches who resided in Canewdon. Pickinghill's last magical act unfolded at his own funeral. As the hearse arrived at the churchyard, an eerie scene played out. Suddenly, the horse stepped out of its shafts and trotted away, bidding farewell to the master himself. It was a haunting and mysterious departure, leaving those who witnessed it in awe. In the early 1960s, folklorist Eric Maple brought Pickinghill's story to wider attention. Maple interviewed Canewdon's residents, collecting their stories about the cunning man. While some sceptics suggested that locals might have embellished their tales to please Maple, subsequent research by historian Ronald Hutton confirmed aspects of the original accounts. However, the intrigue doesn't end there. In the 1970s, occultist E.W. Bill Liddell claimed that Pickinghill was more than just a rural cunning man. According to Liddell's unsupported account, Pickinghill was a major figure in a secretive hereditary witch cult. Liddell asserted that Pickinghill led a Canewdon coven and formed 9 other covens across southern England. Despite lacking scholarly support, Liddell's claims continue to fuel speculation about Pickinghill's true role in esoteric circles. So whether Pickinghill was merely a cunning man or a hidden master of witchcraft, his legacy remains shrouded in magic and mystery, much like the horse that trotted away from his own funeral. A fitting farewell for a man who defied convention and left an indelible mark on the folklore of Essex. In the 1840s, Canewdon was a place where whispers carried secrets, and the line between reality and enchantment blurred.
The parson's wife, a figure both feared and revered, was rumoured to possess mystical powers. Her eyes held ancient secrets, and her touch lingered like a forgotten spell. She tended to her garden, cultivating herbs with magical properties. On moonlit nights, she retreated to her cottage, where a blackened cauldron simmered with potions, promises of love, healing, or curses. The villagers spoke of her affinity for the supernatural, but none dared cross her path. Lady Lodwick, the parson's sister, was no less enigmatic. One day, a housemaid dared to defy her. Perhaps it was insolence or curiosity that led her astray. The housemaid scoffed at the old tales, dismissing them as mere superstitions. She mocked the herbs and the cauldron. That night, as she lay in her narrow bed, the room grew colder. Shadows danced along the walls and the air thickened. The housemaid's limbs stiffened, her breath shallow. She felt as though invisible hands pressed upon her. Lady Lodwick's magic unfolded, a bewitching curse that left the housemaid changed forever. In the 16th century, Ruth Poysey faced grave accusations of witchcraft. The villagers whispered about her dealings with the unseen, her knowledge of forbidden arts. Yet despite these charges, Ruth escaped execution. Her fate remained entwined with the mystical fabric of Canewdon. To this day, a ghostly figure haunts Canewdon's moonlit nights. Clad in a silken gown, she glides over fields and rivers, her headless form ethereal and unsettling. Some say she is Ruth Poysey, forever bound to the village that once accused her. Others believe she embodies an ancient curse, a spectre of forgotten times. Canewdon's eerie reputation extends beyond witches. Locals believe that the devil himself resides in a dug-up tomb within the village. The tomb lacks any conventional markings, no name, no date, only an ominous void. It defies the usual purpose of a resting place. Animal carcasses found around the gravestones add to this unsettling atmosphere. Visitors have reported hearing demonic footsteps in Canewdon. Some claim to have glimpsed a shadowy figure near the tomb. The air crackles with an otherworldly energy, and those who dare venture close feel an inexplicable chill. Wallasey Island, near Canewdon, was a home to a mysterious dwelling known as the Devil's House. According to local legend, this house was haunted by a witch who resembled a flying ape. Whenever she was near, witnesses claimed to hear the sound of wings. The room would inexplicably turn intensely cold. During World War I, an army sergeant scoffed at the haunting claims and vowed to spend a night alone in the Devil's House. The next morning, he emerged pale and shaken, refusing to discuss what had transpired. Became ruined during the 1953 flood, when it was swept out to sea. The building's proper name was the Tile Barn Farm, but its supernatural reputation still persists.
I love the whole story of that place.
Yeah.
I don't know if somebody's written a book about it, but I love the fact that a witch dies when a stone falls from the church, and there's so much folklore involved with it.
Yeah.
Hopefully I haven't missed anything out. I didn't want it to go on for too long, so I sort of hopefully have included everything in there about the folklore. I also want to say that this episode is a little bit shorter than normal. I'm really up against it writing the book. I've got a deadline of like next week where I've had to do rewrites and get everything back in again. So I'm feeling a little bit stressed. We've both had a bit of a moment, haven't we, Toby, before recording this? But what do you think about that village? Would you like to go there?
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good. Maybe we'll take a trip one day, save a bit of money and head up north. Because I've never been up north. I've been, I've been to the Lake District, but that's it. That's as far as I've gone. I'm not a very well-travelled person, I must say.
I've only been, stayed in the West for it most of the time, yeah. Apart from when I've gone to London, and that's it.
Yeah, we should venture up a bit, because there are a few places I'd love to visit, like York and Yorkshire, all the areas up north I'd love to go. Right, are you ready for the three short stories?
Yes, I am.
Story 1. Last night, I was smoking outside at around 11 at night when I heard witch-like laughter coming from behind my yard where cotton fields and a junkyard are. It sounded like two people were laughing, but all you heard were the laughs and no dialogue. For the first 10 minutes of hearing it, I didn't really care, but they started getting closer. And at the end, when I began panicking, it felt I was being laughed at. I couldn't open the gate to let the dogs back in. When I went back inside, I locked all my doors and went straight to my room and stayed in silence. The whole house felt extremely heavy for some reason. I started hearing some shuffling happening in the living room, almost like someone looking through stuff. It went on for maybe 3 minutes and suddenly just stopped. Immediately after that, everything just felt fine, which was odd. All the heaviness just went away. Any idea what any of this means? Never experienced anything paranormal until the two bathroom mirrors started displaying some weird symbol after showering. I'll post the pictures in another post after this. It started in my restroom first, and a few months later, they appeared in the other house bathroom. Last thing, phone is extremely buggy trying to type this. I have a new phone, and this doesn't happen at all. Story 2. A few years back, I went camping with some of my cousins. We'd always seen this circle back in the forest, which we had always been told was the witch's circle, and that they contact spirits there. We camped there a lot, and had never seen anyone ever do that, so we got the great idea of taking it apart. So we did. All about 20 feet of it. The next morning, we got back up and it was all put back together. We were like,
okay, Uncle Palco, nice try, but that's not going to scare us.
Because he always tried to terrify us camping. So back down, me and my cousin Nick went, grabbed the big black centre stone and tossed it into the rushing rapids where no one could get to it. That's when stuff started going bad. The next day, we went back. The stone was there and a fire burnt on top of it. We froze, knowing we'd messed up. We went to bed on edge that night. I woke up to my tent flap open, and he woke up to his trailer shaking and the door open. I will never touch anything like that again. You can go into that circle and there is no sound. The crickets don't chirp or anything. And deep, deep chills that go into your bones. Has anyone else experienced something like this? I also had night terrors and a sleep paralysis demon nightly after that for about 4 months. Story 3. When I was a kid, we lived in a peaceful and calm middle-class neighbourhood. One night, me, my brothers and my mother were sleeping in one room. When morning broke, a scream woke us up.
The scream went as follows. It was pretty high-pitched. Similar to how a stereotypical witch would laugh, but it was much more eerie and non-comical. We all kept quiet. Even as a kid, I knew there was no way this was my neighbour's, but this was out of the ordinary. And then the screams kept repeating. Pause. Pause. It went on for a good 2 minutes until everything became silent. Later that day, my mother told us that it was a good thing we didn't reply to it, for replying to the unknown means you're inviting them. To this day, I still can't wrap my head around what happened. To me, it will always be an old hag witch. Do you know when I first thought I saw witches? Do you know where it was?
Where?
Glastonbury.
Glastonbury.
Yeah, I was so in awe. This is before I started studying witchcraft myself. And we all went for a day trip. And I just was looking around at these like women and you could see it. You could see the witchcraft in them. You know, because it's all very witchcrafty, fairy-like, isn't it, Glastonbury?
Yeah, in that cave thing, there was, like, one of the gypsy witches. That's how, like, their, the fortunes and that.
Yeah, yeah. Couldn't you remember going into the well and people were in there naked?
Yeah, that's where she was. And there she was, like, hidden in the corner, giving people, like, fortunes.
Oh, I love Glastonbury. I really do. I have to go there at least once a year. Just to cleanse myself in the well. Get a bit of spiritual inside me. I do. I really have to go there. And I normally go on my birthday and stuff like that. But I just, like, it gives me that sense of calm when I visit.
Yeah, it's like a very hippie place up there.
Yeah, yeah. I love it.
Like, that's where I got my like green hat thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, and we all climbed up to the tour and stuff. Yeah. And it was freezing cold because it's always windy up there.
Yeah. No, I like doing stuff like that, though.
Yeah, well, we'll do some more of that soon. Definitely.
Yeah.
Maybe we should go for my 50th. I haven't really planned anything yet.
Mm.
It's not far, only a few weeks away now. Keep telling everybody, don't I? It's obviously playing heavily on my mind.
Well, that's the end of this episode. Hope you enjoyed and we'll catch up with you again soon.
We will indeed. We will catch up with you again on Thursday. For more witchy stories, take care, everyone.
Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.